This is Killings, the Kill Your Darlings podcast. I'm Estelle Tang, the online editor.
Hello, my name is Chris Flynn. I'm the editor of Torpedo Fiction Quarterly. And what else do? I write reviews for Australian Book Review, for The Big Issue, on 3000 and other sundry places.
Now that we've established that you're basically the book review king of Melbourne, I understand Torpedo is the first literary journal in Australia to be available on an e-reader. Is that correct, Chris?
That is correct, yes. 10 points.
Yes. Are we going to... We'll have a running
time. Bonus round.
Great.
Can you tell me what kind of e-reader it's available on?
Well, as far as I understand, you've been in negotiations with the Amazon Kindle.
Yes, correct.
And let's talk a little bit about why first, because, you know, it seems like quite a big jump to go from a print journal to an e-reader, especially in Australia, where arguably the market's not quite, it's not by no means saturated by that kind of technology yet.
Oh, really?
Contentious point already.
Yes. Well, I was enjoying doing a print journal, and we did 6 issues of Torpedo, and that was a lot of fun, but it was killing me. The expense, we never got any grants, and...
Was that on purpose?
Look, we couldn't really get grants right from the beginning because we had 50% overseas contributors, so that sort of knocked us straight out of the grant business. And I just hate the whole grant business. It's just a nightmare. So that's why I just didn't go down that road, and I thought, I'll just go independent of the grant structure. I thought it was important to have journals that are outside the grant structure. And that was good, but because I was paying for it all myself, and it wasn't making any money to pay for itself, after 6 issues, I thought, well, that's almost 2.5 years. I can't continue this. And I was interested in making the jump to new technology anyway. So it sort of happened at quite a good time where I decided to stop doing the print journal and make the jump to ebooks.
And so you are no longer going to be doing the print journal?
No, in that it's... I'm not going to be producing a quarterly print journal anymore.
Yep. Only going to be available...
As a quarterly ebook through Amazon Kindle and eventually the Apple iBook store once that gets around to opening outside of the US.
You can obviously now just click on to the Amazon store and buy Torpedo there.
Yep.
But, you know, to get to this point, obviously, there would have been a little bit of a process involved that's quite different to the print production process. Tell me a little bit about that.
In many ways, it's a lot simpler, a lot more accessible if you're not au fait with InDesign and Photoshop and all those sort of programs. The process is just simply a matter of registering yourself as a publisher with Amazon, which pretty much anyone can do, and then just using the very simple desktop publishing software to upload an HTML version of your book or journal. A bit more complicated if you've got a journal because you've got multiple articles and pieces of fiction. There's lots of stuff in there, so it's a bit more time consuming in terms of putting an HTML document together that looks good. Whereas if you've just got a novel, for example, it's a lot simpler to just convert that to HTML. You can sort of do it on Word to a simple degree.
Okay, so Torpedo is available now on the Amazon store, as I said. But can you read it if you don't have a Kindle?
Yeah, you can. Amazon are aware of the fact that, you know, Kindles in the US are an enormous success. There's millions of them around, but outside of the US, they're a relatively new thing. But you can download the Kindle app for your iPhone on your App Store, which just converts your iPhone to a little miniature Kindle. And in many ways, it's actually nicer than the Kindle itself because you can change the color of the background that you can't do on the Kindle. So you can fill around with it, and it's nice for flipping through the pages as well. You can also download that app for a BlackBerry, and also for PC, which converts your PC screen to a virtual Kindle that lets you browse the Amazon Kindle store, download straight to that, and read it as if you have a Kindle. And they're also doing a version for Mac. It hasn't come out yet, but it'll come out very soon, I believe. So you can read it on pretty much every format that's available.
There are a couple of other small press publishers in Melbourne who are thinking of making the change to an e-reader format as well. I know Sleepers are putting out an iPhone app for their next Sleepers Almanac, and Arcade Publications also is going to be putting their publications into e-reader format. What do you think draws small press publishers particularly to making this jump?
Yeah, I think there'll be more than that as well. Since I made my grand announcement last month, whenever it was, that I had done this, I've been contacted by quite a few smaller publishers wanting to know, asking me questions like you're asking today, like how difficult is this, how do I go about it, is it worth my while? So I've been advising quite a few people already. It's attractive because it's relatively simple to do, it doesn't take up a lot of your time, and if you're good at marketing yourself, then for very little sort of time and effort, you can reach quite a large market with this that maybe you couldn't reach with your traditional formats. People who live in rural or suburban areas who don't have access to bookstores, people who like reading short content on a phone, or who have to travel to work every day, it's good for them. So, I think it'll become de rigueur.
Yeah, no, that's interesting that you say that, especially in terms of small presses who maybe have less people involved in the decision-making process. I mean, you know, think about the behemoths of publishing and they've been relatively slow to make big announcements. I mean, in Australia, obviously, to make big announcements about their kind of direction and where they're going with this.
I feel sorry for them, though, because it's almost being forced upon them, particularly from the American market, where e-readers are just increasingly commonplace. And so they're almost put in this position where they have to now convert their content for Kindles, for iPhones, iPads. When that comes out, that's going to be gangbusters. So that's a lot of work if you're a big publisher to sit down and convert your entire catalogue to ebook format. You know, they'll obviously have to pull people off other jobs to concentrate on doing that because they can't not do it. You know, they just can't afford to not do it.
And talking of the personnel involved in this kind of change, you spoke before about how this is beneficial for you as a small press publisher because it maybe frees up a lot of your time. How do you think your role will change in terms of Torpedo now that you'll be publishing solely to an ebook?
It's going to give me because I used to spend a lot of time putting all the stories into InDesign, making sure it all looks good, working with my partner Arian, who's a designer. And anyway, I mean, it was literally a lot of late nights, a lot of time typesetting and so on. And you just don't have to do that anymore. In fact, typesetting's almost pointless because you can change the font size at will on the Kindle. And so, you know, if you painstakingly typeset something, then that's all going to be out the window as soon as someone changes the font size on you. So there's different little design aspects that are eliminated. You don't have to worry about making a print deadline, sending it to printer, dealing with printers, worrying that they're going to stuff something up and then it's all going to have to be redone at the last minute. And all the sort of standard print nightmares. The first three issues of Torpedo were printed, weren't even printed in Australia, they were printed in China. And then it got too expensive printing it in China and became cheaper to print it in Australia. But I know that a lot of big publishers do still print in China, and that's all very well, maybe a bit cheaper, but it takes quite a while for your books to get here. And if they arrive here and they're not quite what you ordered, then you know that can really hold you up. We don't have any of those concerns. In terms of me producing Torpedo, I can sort of almost produce it at the last minute. I can take submissions right up to the last, sort of up until the week before I want to release it. Somebody just found out about it at the last minute and sent me a submission. I thought, oh, it's great, I'm going to put it in. I can do that. I can just drop it in. It's really easy. I mean, that's what I'm doing at the moment for the next issue. I've been preparing it today. And it only really took me 2 hours to convert the stories to the HTML format. That's it, ready to go, you know. And I'm just going to give it till the end of the month until I get a few more contractual things finished and then just publish it.
And there's a lot less risk for you as well, personally, financial risk.
Yeah, well, there's virtually none, you know, because I don't have to pay any money to printing and distribution. There's a financial model that Amazon have in place where they take a certain percentage from you. But in terms of what it takes to get your journal or book up on Amazon for sale live, you know, it's just your own time. There's virtually no other costs involved.
So let's talk a little bit about, and I was having a look at the Amazon shop today, and you click onto the store, and it's the first time I looked at it, so you click onto it and it just comes up with, you know, millions and millions of results. And the first 10, for example, which, you know, is a drop in the ocean of what titles are available there. You've got your big sellers, so you've got what was I going to say, Stieg Larsson, and then you've got kind of, you know, five books by some lady maybe you've never heard of before, books that are at a price, you know, $2, so you're okay. And then you've got a couple of other titles that you might have heard of. I mean, is one part of what your time allocation now will be as a publisher to kind of put more into marketing Torpedo?
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things I'm trying to do with it is get it, although it is a magazine and that's something that comes out, it's a periodical. Amazon do have a separate part of their of their online store, which is just for magazines. But currently, there's only certain titles classified as magazines, and they're all big name titles, Forbes and Time magazine, and so on. So I'm trying to get Torpedo classified as a magazine, so that people know what it is that they're getting. That they're getting something that comes out regularly. It's not just a one-off book. Currently, it's just on there as five different one-off books, and easy to get lost. But it does mean, because it's, you're saving time in producing it, you've got more time to sit down and try to be clever about getting people to know about it.
Yeah, and do you worry, I mean, I think about when I walk into a physical bookshop and the selection's curated by the bookseller, and when you've got a physical product, you can launch it, you know, you can have a, you can hold a launch and you can get it reviewed in the reviews pages of a newspaper or a magazine. I mean, what do you worry about not having access to those traditional avenues?
That does sort of go out the window a bit. I can't send people review copies. However, reviewers, if they wish to review it, can just go on to the Amazon store and you can download a free trial. You can download a sample of anything on Amazon Kindle store. It's about the first 30 pages you get just to have a bit of a read. Or you can have a 14-day free trial of any book. So that gives you usually time to read the thing, and if you don't want it, you can always just not pay for it. You
know? I know some people that, for whom that would be an incredible boon. I mean, they can put away, a lot of people out there can put away a book in a day. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, technically, you could just never pay for a book on Amazon, on the Kindle store. You could just read them, and then I don't know if they police it. If they, at some point you get a man with a big A on his baseball cap who comes to your front door and says, okay.
And so let's talk. I mentioned pricing before, and that's a big issue, obviously, with the whole tussle between Amazon and Macmillan. I think it was in the US.
Yeah.
How do you go about pricing an article that you can look at on a screen, but you can't hold in your fist?
It is the big sort of point of contention for publishers, who a lot of the bigger publishers are understandably trying to raise the price of ebooks. Amazon was just selling brand new releases for $9.99, and publishers have managed to get that bumped up to about $14.99 now. But I think they'd probably like to charge more than that if they could, because there's this sort of fallacy that the majority of costs in print, in publishing, is printing. And whilst that is expensive, if you're a big publishing house, you've got a lot of staff, a lot of overheads, distribution, storage. There's a thousand different ways, marketing, that that you can spend your money. So they can't really afford to be giving those ebooks away dirt cheap. Having said that, I think it is important that they are relatively cheap, because it's not a physical book that you're getting that sits on your bookshelf covered in dust forever that you never look at again.
But this is my Bret Easton Ellis collection.
So it's important that they're priced affordably, because it's a sort of ethereal thing that people are downloading, reading on their handheld device or whatever, and may never, might refer to it occasionally, but it's not a physical object that you're keeping. But I think we're gradually changing our ideas about, I mean, about that sort of stuff. No one buys CDs anymore. We used to have our little sort of CD towers. Like, it was a bestseller at IKEA, the tower where you could put all your CDs in. We don't have them anymore, and we're glad we don't have them, because it's a pain, that thing sitting, the ugly thing sitting in the corner, and every time you vacuum and you knock it over, and all the CDs are all over the joint. And I mean, I just moved house recently, and I think probably 40% of the effort was in packing my books into boxes, that I was trying to maximize the space usage in each box, and then I tried to lift them, and of course, as soon as you try to lift one of those, because they're a ton weight, and getting them upstairs and downstairs, by the end of the day, I was cursing my books. Much as I love my books, I was cursing them, because it was so hard to move them. They're such a huge object, and okay, we're old school, you know, today's generation, we still love books, but I think that will slowly change.
And another thing weighing in on the pricing that a lot of people might not realise, I mean, you spoke before about the process to convert to e-reader format being fairly simple, but I mean, once you start talking about different formats and different, for example, an iPhone app needs a different file to an e-reader, and that takes a lot of expertise, and it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. I mean, Amazon has tried to make this cheap for publishers and relatively simple for them to do, but if you're talking iPhone apps, which everyone just assumes because there are thousands and thousands of iPhone apps that you can download for free or whatever, that this must be a dead easy thing to do, but you need to be a Flash developer to do that and to make it work properly and to make it good. I'm not a Flash developer. I don't really know any Flash developers, and my girlfriend, who's a mid-weight graphic designer, is scared to death of Flash because it's such a complex animation-based website program. Those guys don't come cheap. So if you want to, people say to me all the time, oh, you should just do an iPhone app. Yeah, I should. Shouldn't I?
I should also go to Africa. Well, we've spoken a little bit about the benefits for publishers, but if you as a publisher decide to make this jump, you must also think that there will be benefits for your writers that you publish.
Yeah, well, potentially enormous audience. And certainly the Torpedo audience was always really American-based anyway. It never seemed to get much attention in Australia. I don't really know why that was. It's half of our contributors were Australian, but and so I was getting lots of emails from people in America who wanted to buy it, who wanted just to read the stories, but couldn't afford $20 plus, you know, the expensive Australian post. Every publisher will complain about another $13 on top of that. And Torpedo was designed specifically to fit into a certain size envelope, so it would only cost me $12.70, whatever it was. If it had been a little bit bigger, it would have cost me almost as much as the cover price to send it overseas, and that kills you. But in order to satisfy those people out who were sending me emails saying, we just want to read the stories, now they can. And the Torpedo back issues have been on sale on Kindle Store for, I don't know, 6 weeks or something. American sales outnumber Australian sales 10 to 1. There's virtually no one buying it in Australia, but all the sales are coming from America.
Do you think literary journals have different status or a different readership in America than they do in Australia?
I think they do. I mean, I think there's a small sort of literary circle in Australia that will support journals and support each other's journals and send work to each other's journals, and it's all very sort of this little sort of nice in crowd, and it's nice to be part of that, but it's pretty hard to break through that to reach a general readership. And American audiences seem to be a bit more open to the literary journal as a form. Certainly there are a huge number of creative writing students in America who do enjoy journals and who read them and who submit their work to them and whose courses stipulate that they must do that. So they're usually very familiar with journals around the world because it can be very hard to get into their own sort of local journals. So there just seems to be a much more support of the literary journal culture in America. It just seems to be more embedded in there. I'll go to college and there's a literature program there and they've got this amazing journal. It's not like some piddly little thing that's embarrassing to look at. They usually look good, you know. The Harvard Review looks good. Of course, that's Harvard, but the Chattanooga Review probably looks really good too, you know. I think they are more familiar with it and more likely to support it. So that's sort of good for the Australian writers that we have, because suddenly they're being read by American audiences. Can't be bad.
What have other publishers, maybe from bigger organisations or even booksellers, had to say about your decision to convert to e-readers?
Yeah, well, I was also contacted by some bigger publishers who congratulated me and who said, please let us know how this goes. They're obviously very interested to see what the progress is going to be in terms of people reading on Kindles if they ever sort of take off here. So I think we may have this impression that the publishers are scared of this technology, but I don't think a lot of them really are. They couldn't be that stupid. You'd have to be mad to be burying your head in the sand over this, because whether you like it or not, it's happening. You can't prevent the march of technology. So what was the second part of your question? Oh yeah, booksellers.
I mean, it must freak them out. This kind of model pretty much shuts them out, doesn't it?
I guess it does, but I know a few booksellers. I've been reading some blogs recently that are written by booksellers, and they seem to be quite supportive of it. I was a bit surprised. I thought they'd be frightened to death of losing their jobs, but I mean, the reality is we're going to have print for a very long time yet, and it might improve the quality of print books. In terms of your mass market titles, your airport titles, mean, they're rubbish. No one wants to have that on their bookshelf. It's embarrassing. You get, as soon as you have a car boot, or a car boot sale, as soon as you have a, what do you call them?
Garage sale.
Garage sale. Yes, garage. What's that?
Garage.
Garage sale. You can't wait to get rid of them.
That's true. So maybe, you know, we'll start buying those kinds of pulp fiction-y titles in an electronic format and be buying, you know, the book as gift will...
For sure. I think beautifully designed books are going to become more popular, if anything, because it's a nice present to give to someone as opposed to just some piece of crap that's cheaply printed and that the person doesn't want after a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I think... I don't think booksellers have got too much to fear, because as long as they're stocking really nice books, they'll be fine, and those books will continue to be produced, and people will still want them. It's going to be a long time before we have got rid of everybody from age, you know, 25 and above who loves books, who currently loves books. You know. And kids' books will always be touchy, feely, interesting, make weird noises and have bells and jingles on them. And you get kids at an early age who like tactile books, they're probably going to remember that and want to have tactile books as they get older, although they may be quite comfortable with electronic technology.
Chris has brought in his Kindle for me to have a little play with. So it's black and white. It's
yes.
Not full colour like no. The iPad.
It's 32 shades of grey, and that allows you quite detailed images. Mm. You can get quite good black and white photographs and graphics on there. The problem with the graphics is that the screen is only a certain size and you can't zoom in on the screen.
Oh yes, and Torpedo number 6 was predominantly comics, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, so
that's not available.
It's not available because only about half the comics actually looked okay. They all looked okay, but the problem is text within a comic. If you've got a speech bubble and a character's saying something, and if that text is quite small and detailed, you can't zoom in on it to look at it in more detail. So some of the text became quite... You were squinting to try and see what it said.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the screen here. It's quite a bit smaller than a normal... even a trade paperback book, isn't it?
Yeah, the actual screen is relatively small. I suppose it's probably just about, I don't know, 40% bigger than an iPhone, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Would be about right. But there is a slightly bigger version of the Kindle than this you can also get.
Cool. Let's look at Torpedo on the Kindle. So what am I looking at now?
The screen's not backlit, which means that it just looks like a grey slate. And that means you need to have light to be able to read it. So
yep.
At night time, you won't be able to see the screen. That's meant to make it easier on your eyes so you don't get eye strain.
Yeah.
It also means you can clip a little cute nightlight on to the top of the Kindle at night to read it in bed or...
And we're looking at the Falcon vs. Monkey logo, which
yeah.
looks quite beautiful, like
yeah.
an inky tattoo, almost.
Exactly, yeah. Well, sort of, if you imagine stamps, how old-fashioned stamps looked, that sort of stuff looks quite good on this, and we designed the logo. It was in a new logo, just so it would specifically look good on the screen.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
The ink sort of fades away when you press the next page button, and you can sometimes see a bit of a remnant of the ink in the background, which eventually...
Okay.
Fade.
So the other thing about this is that it's not touchscreen.
No, everyone touches the screen because they think they expect touchscreen technology now.
You kind of want to go to it and touch something like a link or...
Now, this is one of these really old-fashioned e-readers that has buttons and a cursor.
Yep.
Remember them?
Okay, so we're looking at, what is this, the editorial for Torpedo Volume 3?
Yeah. There's the first story.
Okay, and it's like, you know, I mean, it's not that different to a book. The font, you can change the size of the font.
You can change the font size. That's currently on font size number 2, but there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 6 different font sizes.
So that's quite cool. I was talking to a friend of mine, and his mum actually was very excited about e-readers. I think she had a look at one in a shop or something, and she hasn't got very good eyesight. And this kind of thing just means that you can kind of pick anything from the shop and read it, and
yeah,
it's not just, you know,
right,
whatever crap the suburban library's got. You can kind of pick and choose what you want
yeah,
to read.
And they have specifically designed it so that you can have large print books.
Yeah.
Every book can be a large print book. You don't have to buy a special edition in order for it to be readable. You can also make it talk to you. So you can make it read the book to you.
So have you had any feedback from readers about the experience of reading on the Kindle or on your iPhone?
It seems to be that people who've bought it on their iPhone seem to really like it.
Yep.
Seem to really enjoy it. And I don't really know anyone who's bought it on Kindle because most of our sales have been in America.
Yeah.
But certainly people that I've shown it to, I would say younger people, up to about 30, seem to be quite comfortable with it. They, even if they're a little bit skeptical at first, they very quickly warm to it and they grab hold of it, fool around with it, press the buttons and quickly work out how to use it and seem to be quite enjoying it. Anyone to 35 and above seems to be a bit more hesitant and reluctant to actually touch it even. I think maybe it's just what it represents as an iconic device that is forcing a change, and so that's why they're a bit nervous. But people seem to enjoy using it. Most people I've talked to say that they would be reluctant to read a full-length novel on it, but I'm sure people do. Certainly short-form content seems to be very, very accessible on it. Short stories, articles, reviews, that's very easy to read on.
Yeah, and I think that would be the major factor for me personally in choosing to buy one, because, I mean, they're not cheap, all the e-reading devices, but something that you can pick up and automatically have a library with you, not having to in the morning go, oh, okay, I'm going to read this today, and then later be like, I'm on the tram and I don't want to read that at all.
Yeah, well, when I was away here, I'm in the middle of reading Jonathan Lethem's book, Chronic City. It's quite thick, and I wanted to read the next chapter, but it's too big to put in my bag, so I actually chose a brand new book off my bookshelf that's small, so yeah. I could read it on the tram, which is a bit silly of me because I actually had a Kindle in my bag.
But also things like short-form things that you can read easily on public transport or in a bank waiting for, you know, in a queue, or it's just the convenience of it.
One of the good things about it is that you can plug it into your desktop and copy over PDFs.
Yeah.
So if you've got your own files on PDF format, you can just have a read of them there. And also you can email your Word docs to Amazon and they will send them back in Kindle format for your Kindle. So then you can just convert all of your personal docs and then just read them. So that's handy if you're, I don't know, reading submissions, for example.
Yeah. I read a couple of American blogs written by editors, and they just say the one thing that's a runaway success for them with is, yeah, reading submissions, reading manuscripts. I mean, it's much better than carrying around a set of unbound proofs.
It also has a dictionary.
Yes, okay.
Remember the dictionary?
I'm sold.
Yeah.
I do love a dictionary. That is the one thing, actually, that the e-reader has very cleverly, or the Kindle particularly, I don't know about other readers, triumphs over the book, because when you've got a book and you've got a massive dictionary like I do at home, the cumbersomeness, you know, you've got a book and then you fold it down and you break the spine and you're like, oh, and then you open the dictionary and you flip through and you're like, does N come after M? Or
it's tough.
Quite, so you can just show me the dictionary.
Yeah,
on
so
this.
Basically when you're reading anything on it, you just scroll down with the little cursor, and as soon as the cursor hits a word, the definition of that word appears at the bottom of the screen.
Okay. Oh, that's so good.
So you can just go into anything at all.
You know, this would be good for reading John Banville, because I absolutely cannot get through a sentence of his without having to look something up. So there you go, John Banville. I'm going to buy all your books now.
That's the New Oxford American Dictionary, so it's
okay.
It's a pretty decent dictionary.
So it's quite, you know, it's pretty user-friendly. It looks pretty easy to pick up.
Yeah, it is. And I dare say, as they progress, probably once the iPad comes out, which will be full colour, obviously, and touchscreen, I dare say the next generation of Kindle will probably have to try and incorporate some of those aspects. I can't see them resolutely sticking to the black and white non-touchscreen format.
Well, that'll be the other good thing about Apple jumping into this pool, is that necessarily the competition will create better experiences for readers,
well,
no matter what.
Yeah, Amazon entering into that market has already dramatically changing what Kindle means for publishers, because they're forcing Amazon to rethink their business model in terms of how much money they're giving to publishers for issue, because currently they give publishers 35% and they take 65% for themselves, which out of a $10 ebook means you only get $3.50. But on the 30th of June, that's changing. it's basically flipping. They're taking 30% and giving the publisher 70%.
65%. I mean, that is an astounding amount considering they're selling a proprietary e-reading device as well as taking that huge chunk, which does, and it, you know, it leaves very little for publishers, but then necessarily also even less for writers.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, writers would, I suppose, normally get about 15% of retail if they've got a decent deal. And yeah, if they're only, if their book's only selling for $10 as an ebook, then that doesn't leave very much for them. But yeah, that's going to change on the 30th of June, and Apple have said they're going to follow that same model for their iBook store once that ever appears. I'd just be curious to see if they really do take off here in Australia, where it takes us a little while to catch on to these things, perhaps. But I know a few people have got them already.
Yeah.
However, even since the last time I saw you, a few people have told me that they've got them.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you was, what's next for Torpedo?
Issue 7 is going to come out at the end of March. And that has 11 stories in it. I think 7 of those are American writers. I've gone a bit more down that road now. I'm probably heading towards having more American writers, since the Australians don't seem to be remotely interested in it.
No bitterness there whatsoever. Well, that's actually, I mean, that's another benefit of this. You're not tied by having to produce print in Australia to, you know, just the Australian readership. You can be much more responsive to what your actual market is.
That's right. I mean, that's one of the great things for me, is that I can actually have American writers. I could have done issues of Torpedo that would have been entirely American writers from the submissions I was getting, but I didn't want to do that because I live in Australia and I wanted to have Australian content, and I do still want to have Australian content, but given the sales in America are 10 times what the Australian sales are, it makes no sense for me to be loading it up with local content whenever the readership doesn't want that. So I will have maybe, I don't know, 30% local content, 70% overseas content, I would imagine. I'll increase that ratio.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for talking to me and bringing me your lovely little friend, the Kindle, and all the best for issue 7 of Torpedo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Killings. For more information, visit www.killyourdarlingsjournal.com.